With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Case File 27 of Microscope, the show that examines some of the world's biggest mysteries. This episode we're exploring the truth behind an apparent journey through time, as we talk in depth to a traffic warden that says he discovered a time-travelling car. I phoned up Jeffrey Pinto, a traffic warden who has worked for the last 5 or so years. Jeffrey claims that some years ago, whilst working his shift, he came across an illegally parked time-travelling vehicle. Instead of giving it a ticket, Jeffrey says that his curiosity got the better of him and instead got inside the car and activated it, sending him on a journey that took him both backwards and forwards through time. I talked to Jeffrey about all of this, but the recording starts with me asking Jeffrey what he enjoys most about his job as a traffic warden.
I love the community, I love the walk, and I particularly love how people treat you, weirdly.
Really? Because I guess in a lot of people's minds, being a traffic warden, you run into conflict with a lot of people in how you go about sort of carrying out your duties.
Yeah, but they what people forget is that they treat you very nice at the beginning, hoping that you don't give them a ticket, and I love that. They do treat you very badly when you give them a ticket, but they're so nice to you before you give the ticket that I think, compensates for the names that I have been called when I do give them a ticket.
And has it just been angry words? Have you been met with violence? What was the worst, experience you've had trying to give someone a parking ticket?
A man who was about 20 stone, big guy, he lifted me up. I slipped out of my shoes.
What are you talking about? Your shoes fell off.
He lifted me up. Yeah. I came out of my shoes.
No, I don't think that's fair to say, because he's lifted you up. Your shoes have fallen off you. You haven't come out of your shoes. Your shoes are clearly the departing body in this scenario.
No. What you don't know, and, you know, again, I don't know if this is a podcast where people share secrets, but...
It's very much that. Yeah, go on. You've got some secrets to share.
Traffic wardens have very heavy shoes.
Right.
Lead lining, steel cap. And so when he lifted me up, my shoes stayed on the floor, because this guy was about 8 foot. Two.
Right.
So when he lifted me up...
You came out of your shoes.
I came out of my shoes, and his son was about 15,
right,
took my shoes and ran down the road.
Okay, so the shoes are so heavy that you being picked up means they're left on the floor, but they're easy enough to just run off with. And lest we forget, to walk around with on a daily basis as you go about carrying out your duties as a parking attendant.
Well, I didn't realise this.
What did you not realise?
I'm kind of known around the area as being basically the traffic warden you want to get. Because if you see me coming...
Very heavy shoes.
It's going to take me about 10 minutes to get to you and give you a ticket.
Right.
So, you know...
What value is there in having these incredibly heavy shoes that limits your mobility to such a huge degree?
I spend a lot of time on the road, as well as the pavement, and on a number of occasions when I have been giving a stationary vehicle a ticket, the vehicle has become non-stationary,
right,
and ran over my feet. My first day on the job, actually, I was trying to give a bin man a parking ticket because he kept on stopping in the middle of the road.
Yeah, yeah, but surely they're exempt. Surely other sort of public services around the town are not required to adhere to the same rules that we would when we're parking cars.
Well, I didn't know that, and I did
right.
tell this bin man that he kept stopping four times right in the middle of the road.
You gave him a ticket for each time he picked up a bin.
Yeah, his boot was wide open.
Yeah.
And I don't know who the maniacs were that were with him, but they kept jumping out of the van every time
yeah,
he stopped, and were stealing other people's
rubbish
and
recycling.
Well, one man's rubbish is another man's gold. And
yes.
I gave him 4 parking tickets and told him to shut his boot.
Mm. What has happened in your life up until now that you've never experienced the notion of refuse and recycling collection? Where have you been?
Well, I've never been awake to see a bin man. They usually come in the mornings, and my bedroom was always at the back of the house, so I never actually saw what bin men did. It was only when I was sat down at a disciplinary that my boss said, you can't give bin men fucking parking tickets.
Right, yeah. I think that's probably fair enough.
And, you know, I said to him, I thought you no need to swear at me there, young man. But it turns out, he had a right to, because, he was bang on.
I want to get onto the sort of main topic of the mystery, but were there any other public services you gave parking tickets to? Ambulances, policemen? How long did it take you to sort of fully understand the job? And surely you're trained in this at the start.
No, they don't train you. I remember, again in the meeting, he went, he couldn't even look at me. He sat across me at the desk, but he went, "Christ almighty, I never thought I'd have to explain to a full-grown man
right,
what a bloody ambulance was." And I said to him, "Well, you don't need to explain to me what an ambulance is, but you do need to explain to me at what point they are not parked."
Yeah.
And he went, "They're exempt. They can do whatever they want." And I went, "Well, no wonder we need them then. Because with ambulance drivers like that, they're going to cause more problems than they're solving."
What do you mean? Why was that causing more problems?
Well, if an ambulance is just driving down the road and then immediately stops, what if I'm driving a car behind and I fly straight into the ambulance? If anything, that would actually be good because, I'd go straight through the windscreen and fly onto, a bed.
Your plan is to tailgate an ambulance at such high speed that when the ambulance breaks, you smash through your car into the back of the ambulance.
Yes. I have my 18-year-old niece has just passed her driving test.
Yep.
And I said to her, "Look, I really hope you never get into an accident, but if you do, try and crash head first at speed into the back of an ambulance with its back doors open."
So,
and she doesn't like me, is the truth, and she just kind of said all right and moved on. But again, a car breaks down. What is parking? What is a parked car? And what is a broken down car? It's a quandary. It really is a quandary. In the staff room, we have big philosophical, I want to use that word, chats
right.
about, is that a parked car or is that a broken down car? Is that
the distinction in my head seems quite easy. If the car could move, then it's parked. If it can't, it's broken.
Yeah. Correct, and you would fit straight in, actually. You'd be a fantastic addition to the chat.
Now, I also want to get onto if you don't mind, the reason why we got in touch with you for this podcast is that you, in your duties as a traffic warden, came across what? How would you describe it? Basically a time-travelling car? A time machine in vehicle form? What did you see?
Well, I remember the day very clearly. It was a bit like the day that we're recording this. A beautiful 30 degrees, baking hot, not a cloud in the sky. Pixar sure. blue, you understand what I'm saying?
A nice day.
It was a beautiful day, yeah. And I'm walking around and I treated myself to a Solero.
The ice lolly?
Yeah, but I'm still doing my job. So, in one hand I've got a Solero and on the other hand I've got my ticket.
Can you still fill out tickets with one hand?
Well, this was a problem.
Right.
My feet are heavy.
Yeah, of course. Sorry, I forgot about your lead-lined shoes.
Yeah, nightmare in the summer, must say. But, I remember I passed one window of a... It looked like a... do you drive?
I do have a licence, but I haven't driven in about 14 years. No need to in a city, is there, really? In my opinion, if you get the bus. And don't have a family.
Well, this car, the reason why I ask is because I wondered if you had a car. Mm. This car looked like it was a Ford Mondeo, no other way of putting it.
Right.
A simple saloon, 5-door saloon door car.
Yeah, but it looked like it'd been modified for the purposes of time travel.
Again, I'll say it again because I don't think you quite picked up on it. And this is the kind of thing that I see when I'm walking around on the cars. It was a 5-saloon-door saloon car. Do you understand what I'm saying?
What does that mean?
It's a car. It's got 5 doors, yes?
Yeah.
But these doors are saloon doors.
So they were sort of like wooden flapped doors.
Like in a cowboy film.
It's got 5 wooden saloon-style doors, as if in a Western.
Yes.
On the near side passenger driver's seat, the 2 rear passenger seats, and also the boot has got a slightly bigger wooden flap system.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Okay. So it's a Mondeo with saloon doors.
It's a 5-saloon-door saloon car, Mac. Fucking Mac, never seen anything like this in my life.
Yeah, have you not?
And if I worked with someone, I'd return to them and said, you ever seen this? But it's a solitary life. So I just mumbled to myself, I hadn't seen this before.
So you're in front of this 5-saloon-door saloon car, and, well, what, you start investigating it? I assume it's parked illegally.
This thing was parked the most illegal way I've ever seen a car parked.
how do you qualify that?
it was parked on its head.
What do you mean? What do you mean by that? It was like as if where the front bumper is, it was just vertical upwards, balanced inexplicably on its end.
Inexplicably, I can't work this thing out. But it's balanced on its head, on its eyes, on its lamps.
Yeah.
So, you know, strange, curious. Where's this come from? You know, I look up, there's just the sky, like I said, beautiful day. So I'm thinking to myself, wow, you know, incredible. Has there been an accident?
Has there been an accident to cause this car to be completely upended?
Yeah. Has there been an accident? Is everyone okay in there? That's something you learn, you say. You poke your head in and you go, hello, is anyone okay in there? And because they're saloon doors, I can get in quite easily.
Yeah.
Now, swing, and I walk in.
Clamber in, because I'm guessing there's quite a height difference, so you've got to climb up the whole length of the bonnet.
I sit down in the seat.
What do you mean sit down? The car, if it's balanced on its bumper, surely the seats are all facing downwards into the ground.
Yes, they are. So I am now facing the road.
Yeah, you see, you strap yourself in with a seatbelt. Yeah.
I'm dangling, I've got my seatbelt on.
Facing the floor,
facing my partner in crime, the road, the tarmac.
Is that how you view the road?
Yes.
Right.
I can't do my job without the road, and we can't pay for the roads without my job. It's as simple as that.
It's a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah. Now, it was a beautiful car. It was a bit... Now, the thing that threw me slightly, this wasn't a Tesla, but it had a massive, like, iPad in the middle. It didn't have a driving wheel. It just had a massive iPad.
So where the steering column would be, it was just a screen, a flat screen and some sort of, you know, touch interface.
Yeah. Now, by this time, because of the... I'm dangling now. The seatbelt is holding me in. I'm dangling, like, you know, like a fly in a web. Anyway, this thing pops up and it's like...
This is on the touch screen.
On the touch screen. It goes like, you know, where do you want to go? Where do you want to fly? You know, asking me all these questions. I'm like...
Futuristic stuff.
Futuristic.
So I said... a saloon-style door on the side of it.
This is what it said. It said, where do you want to go? Now, I'd finished my shift. It was going to be my last road, as it were. And so I was going to go home after that. So I thought, well, why don't I go home? So I put in my address, 24 Nook Park.
Nook Park.
And it went, okay. And now, this was the problem. This will all make sense to you once we're at the end and fully know the story, but...
I really doubt that's going to happen. But go on. You type in your address into this time-travelling car. What happens?
You press the a button and... it asks, well, basically, it went time. It just said time.
Yeah.
And I went, I don't understand what that means, but I guess, I don't know. I was doing the morning shift. I finished at 12:30, so I just put in 12:30.
Yeah.
Anyway, next thing I know, blackout. I don't remember much.
Travelling through some sort of time vortex as you travel back to, and I'm guessing you say 12:30 time, but it put you back at 12:30 the year.
It put me back to... So I was outside my house, but It's like the address was fine.
Yeah.
But, well, again, I didn't know what year it was, but apparently it was 1230.
So, and it sounds like you live on quite a historic road then. So, Nook Park, was it, that you said you lived on?
Nook Park.
Is a road that has existed for the best part of 800 years in this country.
Yes. So I get out of the car, and I'm thinking to myself, what the hell have I got myself into now? Mm. I go to open my door. Now, they didn't have keys back in 1230. Well, the doors were just open. You just walked in.
You've left the car and you're going up to your... You got to where your house was all these years ago?
It still is. It's still there. I apparently lived in a very old house. I didn't know that.
Right.
But the car also lands like an arrow. This is what I realised. This is why it was face down in the street when I saw it. It propels itself in the air and comes back down at a time of your choosing in the past.
Sure.
So the car was again parked head first in the sand outside of number 24 Nook Park Road.
Yeah.
So I walked in
to your house.
Well, it looked very different. It looked, you know, 1230, they did things differently back then.
Do you have a quick rundown of what had changed in your house? Or, I guess, how your house has changed since?
There was a lot of apples on the floor. It was a goat at the top of the stairs that just stared at me, you know? Proper, like, don't come up here, son. Then in the left was a... there was a woman who was knitting. There was about 8 children running around. And there was a bloke in a bathtub, completely covered in soot, washing his bollocks and biceps.
Right.
I thought, I'll leave.
You'll leave them to it.
I'll leave them to it.
Did they have any issue with you just walking into their house?
Yeah, the woman dropped her knitting. Yeah. The goat fell down the stairs. The bloke jumped out of the bath and started running towards me. And the children, they didn't know what the hell was going on. I ran into the pantry, kitchen area, and it was there that their chef well, I don't know if it was
they're quite a well-to-do family despite having apples on the floor and a man covered in soot washing his bollocks in the same room as his kids.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Anyway, so the chef he sees me, spots me. He says, quickly, hide in here, hide in the fridge. Now, you know, 1230 fridge, it was a bit different back then.
Yeah, it's just a cold room, wasn't it?
Yeah, more like just a cold room. So I dived in and the chef, I could hear the chef saying, oh no, he must have ran out the back. He must have ran out of the back. And that's when I came out, about midnight. The chef spoke to me and he went, well, what do we have here? And I said, this is my house. And he went, well, you're mad. What are you talking about? And I said, I am from the future. And we sat down, broke bread, bottle of wine. And, you know, I had an extraordinary adventure with him in the car.
You took the chef from the year 1230 back into the time-travelling car and went, what, into his future or your future?
2500. Let's see what happens. And, bang, we landed. The chef wanted to go to the, the chef knew what the Tower of London was. I said, well, we could go near there, near the river. I said, we can go there or we could go up to the London Eye. Well, he was like, what's that? It's like it's a Ferris wheel of some kind. You know, anyway, we basically decided enough's enough. I'm taking the chef to Harrods. So we went to Harrods, 2500 AD. And wow, that shop hasn't changed in what will be 600 years.
Yes, sure. And were there any differences, given that you travel back and forth between these time periods quite excessively, any differences in how your job, being a traffic warden, is carried out? Is that different in the past, different in the future?
Well, of course, I left the Shetter shop in the food court, and my first thought was, I wonder what a traffic warden, I wonder what the job is like in 2500 AD. So I went out onto the busy high street, Kensington Road, and it was busy, yes, with people. But of course, you know, as the Jetsons predicted many moons ago, cars are now in the air. And I bumped into a traffic warden and said, well, how do you police this? And he said to me, well, it's pretty tricky because of the lead-lined boots, we can't get up there. And I said, I beg your pardon? He said, because of the lead-lined heavy steel cap boots, we can't get up there, so they can fly off.
So they'd park in mid-air and just sort of clamber out?
No, so I actually witnessed this happen. A SUV Jeep parked outside Harrods. My friend, who was the traffic warden, who I just met, lovely chap, Charles, he went to give the vehicle a parking ticket because a lot of people just think they can park outside of Harrods. And as soon as they saw him coming, they just flew back up in the air and he couldn't grab them. He couldn't grab them. And so I said, well, you know, how do you make a living? And he said he doesn't.
Quite hard for a traffic warden to give a ticket to something that's hovering.
Indeed it is. Now, of course, you're given a parking ticket to a, you know, these days you put it on a windscreen wiper. but when they're hovering in the sky, you've got to kind of get them underneath. You understand?
Right, you apply the ticket to the bottom of the car because that's the bit you can reach easily.
Yes. Now, the excuses that are constantly used are that, well, if you put it there, I can't see it. And a lot of parking, you know, if you stand in the future looking up, a lot of cars driving past you, you'll just see thousands and thousands of parking tickets because they just go, well, I can't see it because when I park up at home, people don't live in the sky, I don't know it's there. And it's a fair point. So basically, you need people to get taller. I think that would help.
Also, to not wear these giant steel lead-lined shoes.
Well, that would help too, of course. That would help too. You need people maybe with longer arms or maybe just bigger tickets. There was an initiative brought in that the tickets should be about, I don't know, about 50 foot long.
Right.
You know, almost like a long receipt. Again, that didn't get much traction, and everyone booed Charles because everyone hates him because he's a traffic warden.
So some things don't change in the future.
Some things do change, and some things don't change. It's as simple as that.
And could you just give us a quick sort of snapshot of what things were sort of massively different in the future compared to what we might, you know, expect now?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, football, for example, a football stadium can hold upwards of 200,000 people. There are 5 footballs on the pitch. Right. And when the game finishes, the pitch goes up in half like a book. It then goes down into the ground.
It just folds up.
Folds up, and you better be off that pitch quick. Otherwise, you're going to be stuck in there till the next weekend's games.
Why does it do that?
That's a great question.
You weren't a lot round there long enough.
No, I was moving.
Did you experience how having 5 balls on the pitch at once changes the flow of the game?
It does change the flow of the game extremely. There are a lot more goals, and there are a lot more injuries.
why does the injury rate increase?
You know, you're chasing one ball, and then another ball smacks you in the head.
I see, right. So it's purely ball-to-head injuries that I guess would be increased if you increase the number of balls on the pitch.
Yes, most injuries are the ball going into, you know, private areas, face. So a lot of dental issues, a lot of eyes, black eyes. One bloke had his brain knocked out. Horrible, horrible business.
Had his brain knocked out?
Knocked out, yeah. Terrible.
On the pitch?
On the pitch. And somebody thought it was a football, and they continued to play with the brain.
Christ.
Tragic story. You know, chicken legs are the same. They look like chicken legs.
Oh, sorry, we're moving on to chicken legs, are we? So that's football. How have chicken legs changed?
No, they haven't. Not at all. You go to a kids' party.
Sorry, those are one of the things that haven't changed. So football is sort of somewhat different. Chicken legs are the same in the future, right?
Yeah, they're the same. Big Ben is now digital, completely digital.
Of course.
In the future, cars are in the air. You don't buy... books don't have covers anymore. People have got rid of book covers. It's just books
just
now.
The pages just start.
Just the pages. They've got rid of the covers, which I found strange, illuminating, and weirdly beautiful. Although it is a nightmare looking for a book that you want in a bookshop, because there's no spine or cover to judge it off.
It's just the glue and the pages.
Just the glue and the pages. So the only way you know what book you want is by knowing how many pages it has and then roughly guessing.
What are you talking about?
Well, you're not going to compute...
Surely most books have between 400 or 500 pages. You're telling me you're going around a bookshop in the future comparing the width of the spine of every book to get a vague idea of that's the one you're after?
And I will be honest, to quote the quite rude... book lady in the
bookshop of the future.
When I said, for God's sake, how do I find what book I want? She went, well, you're not going to confuse the width of the twits with War and Peace, are you?
No, sure. But to be fair to yourself here, and I'm sure you probably said this to her, they're very polarised examples.
That's what I said to her. I said, well, excuse me, I'm not going to go to the kids section. As she said, we've got rid of sections. Right. I don't know who you are, where you're from, but we don't do sections anymore. We don't judge a book by its cover because they don't have them. And we got rid of genres. There are no genres anymore. So you just got to go and find your own book. And I just thought, well...
Did you look around the bookshop and see how the other customers were faring with this this new regime? I guess growing up with it, they were all used to it.
There was a chap there just browsing. He said, I'm just browsing. I'm like, well, we're all just browsing, aren't we?
And he went,
oh, well, what I like about it is that you put your hand in the shelf and you never know what's going to come out. You know, I thought, this is a very high-pressured world that I don't want to be a part of.
Sure, and how long were you in the future?
I spent a week at Charles's house.
This is the other traffic warden.
Yeah, I spent a lovely week with Charles in his very modern home. No windows, because they tax windows now.
Do they?
Yeah, so he said...
what do you have?
Just like peepholes that you've got indoors.
What?
So he's got, like a peephole you've got in a door.
Yeah, he'd have that in the wall.
He's got about 40 of those around his house, yes.
Right, so just poke his eye and look at a cloud. Right.
Yeah. And
Any other changes?
Well, he's got a drone that is now a pet. Pets are now drones.
What sort of behavioural characteristics does it approximate? Is it like a bird? Is it like a dog? How does it react and respond around the home environment?
I watched Charles's drone. It kind of banged against my door, trying to get my attention every morning. So in that way, it was like a cat. It stayed a bit like a fly, with banging against the window.
Are flies pets?
I don't know.
I think we're getting off on a tangent here when we probably should be discussing the mechanics of being a traffic warden far out in the future.
No, it does. It does. It does link in, because I remember looking at the drone and I said to Charles, I said, Charles, in many ways, when I was back in my job, in the early 2000s as a traffic warden, we all thought that drones would be the future and take our jobs. And he said to me, well, it hasn't happened yet. And then we looked at his pet name was Tabitha.
Tabitha the drone.
Yeah. And we looked at Tabitha, and then I looked back at Charles, and I said, are you thinking what I'm thinking? And he looked back at me and went, she needs feeding? And I went, well, yeah, I suppose so. So we plugged her in. But then after a while, I said, Charles, that wasn't actually what I was thinking earlier. How about we attach you to the drone and you can fly up there? Because
so your plan to sort of get Charles up to an elevation where he could sufficiently give parking tickets?
I said, we need to attach you to that drone and have you flying in the air with nothing on your feet.
Yes.
He said, well, I don't think Tabitha will be able to take my weight. And I said, well, we need to go down and get a new pet. So we went down to the rescue, the drone rescue shop.
The drone rescue, right, I see.
Yeah,
where
they've
got lots of abandoned drones.
Yeah. And, there's some that are absolutely banging at the window to see you scary thing. Big old Great Dane drone, like the size of a bloody tank, banging on a window. And I said, Charles, that's what you need.
So they've got personalities. They've got almost like artificial intelligence inside them to make them, you know, respond like...
Their personality is mainly banging on windows and walls. I mean, that's all they do, really. Yeah. They either sit in the middle of the room or they bang against the window.
Yeah.
But this Great Dane drone, I said, Charles, you need that. That's the size of a tank, and you can fly up and you can get as many tickets as you want with that fucking thing. Look at it, it's banging again. That glass is thick, you know? I mean, I thought, Christ. Now, this thing, I mean, wow. Imagine taking a Great Dane for a walk. That thing's walking you. This drone was walking us.
Yes.
It was on a lead, but that didn't do much.
On a lead?
Yeah. Well, we're not letting it go off. It doesn't know where it...
This thing is the size of a tank.
Huge. Like a little panzer kind of thing. So I said to Charles, well, I don't know, do you want to get on its back and fly high? And he said, sure. So he got on, and, well, that was the last we saw of Charles.
I see, was it?
He never came back, sadly. Last time he was seen flying over the Atlantic. But I remember thinking, well, I'm going to get the blame here, without doubt. So I went back to his house, and I got his things in order, and... I thought he must be remembered in some way, but is there a way I can remember him, but like pre-remember, you know, like in Minority Report when you arrested someone before they committed the crime?
Let's not bring into yet more confusing aspects. What you're saying is that you want to remember this friend of yours that you've developed, but you're going to go back into the past.
Yes, how do you remember someone who hasn't existed yet?
Well, I think it's the same principle, it's just slightly different language. If your personal sense of time isn't going to be reverted or inverted, you're just going to go back to where you came from.
If only things were that easy!
Right.
This is going to sound ridiculous to you.
Is it?
I couldn't, for the life of me, remember where I'd parked the bloody car.
Yeah.
I just couldn't remember, you know. I was having this fun with Charles, I was going to Harrods. Anyway, I finally remembered, and, well, would you have it? I'd got a parking ticket.
Had you?
Now, I've never got a parking ticket before, you know. Who's given me this ticket? I got in the car, I opened the envelope. Now, most tickets aren't in envelopes, so that was a strange one.
And why was that?
It was from Charles. He said, don't worry, this ticket is null and void, but I just wanted to leave you a message. You taught me many things in your brief stay with me, but it was mainly that I felt trapped by not just the boots, but by the job. I have found love, and with the help of the Great Dane... drone, the Great Dane drone.
Yeah.
I have flown to America, where I hope to start a new life. Good luck in whatever you do, and remember, keep parking. And I wept uncontrollably. I'd met a friend, I'd saved his life, some might say. I typed in the year back to where I wanted to go, back to my house, and when I landed there, Well, I wept again. Again, I won't lie to you, I wept again. I got out of the car, the saloon door, so I fell out, really, and I went to bed. And, well, I mean, I feel emotional telling you that story because it's the first time I've ever really opened up about it. Charles, of course, isn't born yet. He won't be born for another 440 years. But I hope to one day maybe meet him again in this life or the next.
Yes, well, fingers crossed. Well, Geoffrey Pinto, thank you very much for joining us.
I appreciate you listening to me, and remember, kids, keep parking.
Well, that's what we've got time for. This episode was researched by John Kearns and edited by Matt Ewins. Sound effects were added by Ben Williams, and the theme tune is by Nikki Green. Next week is our penultimate episode, for a little while at least, but it should prove to be very interesting. I get to the bottom of allegations that a horse race trainer was using a centaur to cheat races. But until then, remain vigilant, and catch you next time on Microscope.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.